And we are very pleased to have here in the studio with us this morning Adam Brown. He is a state representative. He's a Republican. He now represents the 101st District. He is running for a new district. This will be the new 102nd. And this new district includes Shelby County, also Moultrie, Douglas, parts of Macon, Vermilion, Edgar, Champaign. We're talking about the big cities of Villa Grove, Tolono, Shelbyville, Tuscola, part of Savoy. Am I missing anything?
It's interesting. The largest community in the new district actually is Paris, with a population of 8,400. But all the districts are redrawn every 10 years based on the new census information. In this case, it was drawn to be a very agricultural district, stretching from Pena on the west side, the Indiana border on the east side, smack dab in the middle right there is Champaign. And so it's a very interesting change for me. Of course, every new district in the state, House district, it has a population of about 110,000 folks. And so while my district is becoming very rural, the district that I hope to represent, you've got other areas up in Chicago that take up, you know, about four square blocks there because such a dense population. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting what we're seeing here downstate.
All right. Well, let's get right down to it. The big issue, very obviously everyone knows, is the state's financial condition. Even with last year's tax hike, the governor's office says it expects a deficit of hundreds of millions of dollars this year. They have called for a 9% cut in most areas of government except education and health care. And we also know we have a big backlog of unpaid bills, something like $8.5 billion of unpaid bills. How do you begin to attack this?
Well, I was sworn in January 12th of last year, just 12 hours after the largest tax hike in Illinois' history, unfortunately. My predecessor voted for that tax hike. I defeated an eight-year incumbent Democrat to take this office in the 101st District. Unfortunately, being sworn in on the boots of the largest income tax hike in history was something that, of course, I caught a lot of grief for. The state of Illinois believed it could pay down some bills, but it just really hasn't happened to the degree that I would have loved to have seen. Still, we have that $8.5 billion backlog of bills. 60,000 jobs left Illinois last year. I believe we need to repeal the tax hike. Not only the income tax hike, but also the estate tax hike, the corporate income tax hike. All three of those were bundled into this bill that was passed in the lame duck session just before I was sworn into office.
So you don't think that tax increase that was passed last January had any positive effect?
You know, I think it really killed our jobs climate here in Illinois. We saw a lot of the 60,000 jobs drift out of our state. We saw Caterpillar announce just last week that they would love to expand here in Illinois, but they're not going to based on our jobs climate. I speak with our major employers, our small employers. My family is a fifth-generation family, farm family. And what we see is just more government, more spending, and more waste, and it's killing our jobs climate.
The tax hike is slated to go away in 2015. Some people think that it should go away sooner. What do you think?
I agree with that completely. I believe it should be repealed immediately. I believe the effects of that tax increase have killed our jobs climate. And I believe we need to expand our jobs base, grow our population base, and I believe that'll shrink our tax burden.
All right. Let me ask you about two big things that are targeted for cuts because they're very large programs. One is Medicaid and the other is the pension. The governor says that he would like to cut $2 billion from Medicaid this year. We are headed for a crisis, a lot of people say, if we don't find some way to reduce spending. This budget year, the state will spend something like $14 billion on Medicaid, and it's estimated that if nothing changes in 5 years, we'll see a 41% increase over current levels. So serious, we got a serious problem here. Yep. What do you do about that?
Welfare reform is long overdue, and I see it right in my home community of Decatur. Link cards are traded on the street for about 50 cents on the dollar is the going rate that we're hearing about. That could easily be addressed by putting photo identification on link cards. We all believe that the most vulnerable among us in society need to have the opportunity to be served by those of us that are more fortunate. But the fraud, the abuse in the system has to be eliminated, and I believe photo IDs is a good start to that. Also, I believe we need to cut aid to illegal immigrants. You take a look at a program like KidCare. Sounds great on the surface, but 80% of KidCare actually goes to illegal immigrants. And if we're going to solve the situation, we're a land of immigrants, I believe, that you need to get your green card, you need to become a citizen, and you need to pay into the system. Unfortunately, a lot of illegal immigrants in our system right now are not paying income taxes because they're not documented. I believe if they pay into the system, then they should have the opportunity to receive from the system. Unfortunately, that's just not happening. Across the state of Illinois, about $4 billion last year was spent on illegal immigrants, both at the state, local, and federal level, benefiting Illinois illegal immigrants. That's a large portion of the budget that I believe needs to be addressed.
Well, how much, just on that point, how much Medicaid money goes to take care of illegal immigrants?
Well, as I mentioned, about $4 billion across the state. That's including local funds as well. But a lot of the local funds benefit from state money. So it's tough to say because of fund transfers exactly where that money's coming from. Very difficult to break down. I believe it has to be addressed, though, when we've got an $8.5 billion backlog of money.
I think that some people have looked at the Medicaid problem and said, really, if you're going to significantly cut the amount of money we're spending on Medicaid, you got three options. You can change the eligibility rules so fewer people qualify. You can cut your reimbursements to medical providers, something that the governor, I think, has last year already proposed and the legislature wasn't friendly to. Or you can reduce the number of services that you provide. Mm-hmm. Of those three things, what would you cut?
Definitely eligibility. As I mentioned, illegals are receiving aid that they're not paying into the system for. You take a look at our welfare system. It has expanded by leaps and bounds over the past 10 years, doubled over the past 10 years in payments. I believe a lot of that is attributed to fraud. Folks find these loopholes in the system, let their friends know that they can, you know, sell their link card and then use that money to go buy drugs illegally. It's a problem that's perpetuated down the wrong path. And I believe that type of monopolization of funding is taking away from our children, taking away from education where it should be going. In fact, the K-12 budget is actually smaller than our welfare budget here in Illinois. So we're spending more money to teach folks, you know, how to get by day to day rather than educating them for the future. And I believe that's the wrong path.
Well, the link card is something that people use at the grocery store. This is what took the place of food stamps, and that's federal money. Isn't that really a different sort of a thing from Medicaid?
No, the link card is essentially the state's food stamp program. So the food stamp program is a federal program. Link card is a state program. If you take a look at how some of it's being spent, though, in many cases that we hear about here locally, folks can't buy dog food on their link card, of course, but they can buy human food and feed it to their dog. So we hear hamburger meat is being bought, taken home, given to dogs or animals. Other situations we're hearing about are people really stocking up on food, getting as much as they possibly can, maxing out their link card, and then taking that to a private business that they own, selling it in a restaurant or something of that sort. That's the type of abuse that it's got to be addressed for.
Illinois provides services through Medicaid that a lot of other states don't. Dental care, prescription services, in-home health care, hospice care. The most expensive thing is the prescription drug program. Of those things, would you cut any of that?
I don't believe so. I think eligibility is the largest stipulation that needs to be addressed. You take a look across the board, and I believe preventative maintenance as far as health care goes, taking care of our elderly through Illinois RX is very important. That was cut in half this past year to the detriment, I believe, of Illinois citizens. At the same time that the DREAM Act was expanded, so we had more money going to, again, illegal immigrants, less money going to our seniors. I believe that's backwards.
So you think that by taking care of the fraud problem, that is enough to control the increase that's projected in the cost for Medicaid?
I think it's definitely a starting point. And if you take a look at how our budget is drawn, it's still not not perfect by any means here in Illinois. In years past, they've taken a look at how much they expended on different accounts. For instance, committees are broken out. I was on Public Safety's committee for appropriations. Also, you've got higher education. You've got healthcare. You've got a number of these committees. And previously, how the budget was drawn up was you'd take a look at how much you spent, allocate that amount or what you believe is fair without taking a look line by line at the programs that it was going towards. Fortunately, that was changed this year with the appropriation committees digging a little bit deeper, taking a look at all the fund allocations. But the problem that still exists is that it wasn't transparent. If I tried to go to a committee meeting that I was not a member of, for instance, I was not allowed in the doors. Mm-hmm. So even though I'm a state representative, I'm a sitting member of the House, I wasn't allowed into meetings that were going to dictate how funds were spent in years to come. In fact, they even blacked out the windows of these budget meetings. Mm-hmm. I believe that lack of accountability, that lack of transparency is exactly what's wrong with Illinois. If you're not accountable even to other representatives, you're definitely not being accountable to citizens of Illinois.
Just let me ask you one more thing about Medicaid. Again, this going back to what it is you do to control costs. It looks like the governor is once again going to be talking about cutting back on reimbursements. Would you favor that?
Probably not. You know, our local health care providers are filling a very necessary need here in society. I believe the starting point here is abuse and digging into the budget line item by line item. It still hasn't happened, even with an $8.5 billion backlog. The lack of seriousness that we take to drawing up a state budget is affecting all of us.
Our guest in this hour of focus is Adam Brown. He is a Illinois state representative. He's a Republican. He right now represents the 101st District. He is going to be competing in the March primary against Robert Roman. And he'll, by the way, be on this program on March 12th. So you'll have a similar opportunity to talk with him. The two of them are competing for their party's spot in the new 102nd District. And we're going to have a number of candidates with us on the program in the weeks ahead. All these programs will be archived on our website, WILL.illinois.edu. We're here on this morning on WILL AM and also online at will.illinois.edu if you'd like to watch as we talk. And questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have a couple of callers. We'll get to right to them. First, we have someone in Normal. This is line number one. Hello.
Hello, good morning. Great program. Yeah, I just had a few ideas rolling in my head. So you're talking about, like, with kid care, I think earlier you said a large percentage of that was going towards illegal aliens. And one thing I was thinking, I do believe that if you're here, everyone is going to, for the most part, have to have a job. You can't survive in this world just off of, I mean, I guess, I don't know, maybe people do. I don't see how you could survive purely just off of government benefits. And especially with the illegals that I've had experience with, I mean, they do. I mean, they'll have a fake Social Security number or whatever else, and their paycheck, it's getting taxed. Everything is coming out of that thing. But later on down the road, when they turn 70, I mean, there are things where it's going to be problematic. It's like, well, hey, I have paid money, but I've got to use this fake ID and all this other stuff. It seems to me to be a little bit wrought with fear, ultimately, and it shows the desperation of where they come. But see, we argue so much about the people, but it's the factories. I would like to see more of Arizona needs to put up a fence there to keep the factories from leaving. It's, you know, we should make a statement. It's like some of these factories, we have a security national interest to make sure that, you know, like a car company, it stays here. It's like, no, guys, we don't – you see your profits aren't quite right. Well, you've got national interests to stay here, which are greater than profits. And your heinies are staying right here, giving Americans job and that stuff. And well, I would like to see more of a aggressive stance to prevent these factories. You know, like they don't want to leave Illinois on the borders.
Yeah, let's pick up
on
that.
Nobody –
that question.
You're not leaving Illinois.
Let's pick up on that question. I think it's a good one, and I need to sort of jump in here because I wanted to get to that. This was one of the things that I know that you want to talk about. I think it's pretty significant, and that is what can be done to improve the business climate for the state.
Well, I think what he was getting towards is our jobs climate in Illinois is horrific. There's no denying that over the past year alone, we lost 60,000 jobs. Over the past 10 years, almost 800,000 manufacturing jobs alone. The situation comes down to, as far as I'm concerned, the workers' compensation needs to be reformed. Indiana pays out half as much as we do in Illinois in workers' compensation. That's because their workers' comp laws are tightened down a little bit more to prove that the incident is actually happening on work time rather than over the weekend where somebody might have been playing a game of pickup football or something like that. Causation is very important to reforming our workers' comp situation, very important to keeping major employers here in Illinois. Also, the tax base definitely ties into that. We saw the estate tax reinstated just before I was sworn into office. That kills small businesses. That kills family farms, which I'm well acquainted with. And any assets originally with that estate tax that were passed on from one generation to the next, were going to be taxed at a rate of about 16% if they were over the threshold. So having more government intervention, more government interference, I believe is detrimental to our business climate.
I want to just real quick. I cut in on the caller, and if you want to make okay. Well, let's go on to somebody else here. We'll go to Coles County. This is line number four. Hello.
Yes, I just wanted to. I may have misunderstood something he said, but I wanted a clarification. I thought he said something about that he was not allowed to sit in on committee meetings of a committee that he was not a member of. I think these committees, 99% of them anyway, are open to the public. I can't believe that he wasn't allowed to sit in a committee meeting, at least as a member of the public, sit where the members of the public sit in the public galleries. Aren't I correct in that?
No, in this case, actually, during the budgetary meetings for appropriation committees, originally I sat on public safety appropriations. I was moved off of that committee. And then, of course, no longer allowed into the committee meetings addressing the budget situation. This lacked transparency. As I mentioned, they even put up blinds on the windows so you couldn't look in. You couldn't know what members were discussing, which programs they believed needed to be cut back on or expanded.
You mean it was closed to the public, in other words?
That's correct.
Closed to the public.
That's correct. As well as to other members if they didn't sit on the committee. Even beyond that, it was closed to the media. True.
I'm really not concerned about you being closed out, but I am concerned about the public being closed from it. How is that legal? There ought to be a law saying that all committee meetings should be open to the public. I'm not so concerned about whether you were allowed, but I am concerned about the public and the press being allowed in them. Shouldn't there be a law, or isn't there a law that all these committee meetings should be open to the public?
As far as I'm concerned, I believe it violated the Open Meetings Act.
Yeah.
Of course, our leadership... the leadership of the Democratic Party would argue with me on that. I actually brought it up to a leader last week that I had a sit-down meeting with. She let me know that she believes it's appropriate because they had other meetings that the public was privy to.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. You can also go online. If you'd like to send us an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Let me just real quick again get to this issue of who has the power. And I think that we know, no big secret, that the power in Springfield is concentrated in the hands of the leadership of the two parties and somewhat in the hands of the governor, although you can argue just how much power, in fact, the governor has. So you are not in the leadership and you're in the minority party. How does someone like you have any influence?
Well, we're starting at the grassroots level, and I'm actually the youngest member sitting in the General Assembly right now. It's a tremendous honor to be there, but we got there through hard work, through building a coalition, through building a farm team, in essence, that we believe is going to build this state Start from the ground up. Take a look at our problems. $8.5 billion backlog in bills, $120 billion budgetary applications and debts. And it's going to take time, but we have a lot invested in this state, and we believe we can turn it around. As you noted, about 64 Democrats in the House, 54 Republicans. So the concentration of leadership right now sits with Mike Madigan. Mike Madigan's been Speaker of the House for, I believe this is his 30th year now. 2 years we had the Speaker's seat from 96 to 98, I believe. And so he wields a tremendous amount of power, even more so, I would argue, than the governor.
I'm not sure that he's been speaker for 30. He may have been in the legislature for 30 years. I'm not sure if he's been speaker for 30 years.
I believe he's entering his 30th year.
Really? Well,
if I remember.
I could be mistaken. Let's go to the pension question, because this is one of the two really big, perhaps biggest items, things that have to be dealt with. Illinois has one of the most underfunded pension systems in the entire nation. And the governor has said pension reform is going to be at the top of his agenda. It seems like everybody agrees something has to be done. The problem is nobody agrees on what. What do we do?
Well, I'll tell you, I was sworn in January 12th of last year. The pension problem dates back many, many years prior to that. But I came in under a tier two, which actually means I'm in a different pension system than I'll be voting on for current employees. Mm-hmm. So in my case, I'll have to work until I'm at least 67 in state government to receive a full pension. I'll tell you right now, that's not going to happen, but, it's a very different situation than a lot of other current employees are in. So you've got to differentiate that, moving forward from January 1st of 2011, it's a different pension system. It's a completely different ballgame. But we do have to talk about current employees. The average pension in my district, currently, I represent part of Macon, Moultrie, and Shelby counties. Average pension for a state employee is about $29,000 a year. So it's very different from what you might hear about commonly on radio and TV. Up in the suburbs, of course, you've got some superintendents making over $400,000 a year, more than the president of the United States. So it's the situation varies tremendously as you travel across the state. There are also many separate pension systems. Chicago teachers have their own pension system. Downstate teachers have a different one. Chicago teachers' pension has been funded tremendously better than the downstate teachers' pensions. And that's attributable to where the leadership has been over the past several years. Rod Blagojevich, of course, governor out of Chicago, he started some pension fund sweeps that were definitely struggling from now. He robbed Peter to pay Paul, in essence. That type of pension liability with interest on top of it has really spiraled into a tremendous problem. There's a lot of fraud and abuse in that pension system as well. We addressed one situation just last year where a state employee was able to sit in as a substitute teacher for one day and draw a teacher's pension because he was exploiting a loophole in Illinois law. Fortunately, we filled that loophole. There are others that are going to have to be addressed.
We really got two big things we had to deal with separately, in a sense. One is, for what do we do about people, say, who are, say, we're someone who works for the University of Illinois, who starts today, and people like me, for example, who are more than 30 years.
Sure.
So for the people that are starting today, now the it seems like the big suggestion has been this creation of a three-tier system, which would mean either you get the same benefits but pay more, pay less but get less benefits, or something that would be like a 401k. So you get to choose.
Correct.
What do you think about that plan?
Well, and that's exactly what I had, because I was sworn in after January 1st of last year. For current employees, the state constitution says you can't diminish the benefits. It says it plain and simple. So I believe the state is trying to route a different direction. Senate President John Cullerton came out with a proposal. He believes that local school districts should foot the bill for pensions. Currently, they pay a very, very small percentage of into the pension system. He believes that needs to be upped, and he believes local governments need to foot the bill for the state's problem. I believe, you know, the state needs to swallow its pride, get its priorities back on track, and fund its pension obligations as it's promised to do. It's right there, plain and simple, in the state constitution. And a lot of the issue there is underfunding over the past several years, dating back even before Governor Blagojevich.
So this idea that has been proposed that says to, say, schools, to the University of Illinois, to local government, that saying to them, you're going to have to pick up a bigger part of the cost for your retirees, you would not support that?
That's correct. I mean, President Cullerton wants to pass the burden from the state to the local governments. Local governments can't support this initiative. They'd have to raise taxes. And it's just pushing the problem down the road, pushing the problem to other folks to make the difficult decisions that the state of Illinois should be making.
So what about, though, for people who are in the system now and have been in for a long time? So either maybe they're getting close to retiring, or we have people that are retired. Here we run into this question about the Constitution says you can't diminish the benefits. And yet at the same time, people are saying, well, you really have to look at that cost, too. So people who are just coming in are one thing. People who have been in for a long time are another. Is there anything that you can do to reduce those costs?
Well, I think we have to take a look at all options. We have to bring all folks and all parties involved to the table and express their ideas and get a good understanding of how we can work this situation out. What Arizona just tried to do was affect pensions for current employees. It was ruled unconstitutional in a court. I believe that would probably happen here in Illinois as well. We have to find a different solution. And I believe there are a lot of parties involved. It's going to take a lot of work. But good bills are passed when you communicate well with other parties, even if they believe very differently than you. I believe that's essential in moving forward.
In this hour of Focus, we're talking with State Representative Adam Brown. We'll talk some more in just a moment after a very short break. This is Focus.
WILL programs are made possible by Community Concierge and American Concierge magazines. Every issue includes an event calendar, attractions, and a business and shopping guide. Concierge magazines are distributed throughout Central Illinois and always present the Champaign-Urbana and Bloomington-Normal areas at their best.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you listening on WILL AM and watching. If you are watching through our website, that's will.illinois.edu. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics for you every week. In the second hour today, we'll be taking your health care questions, and our guest will be Dr. Jeff Swearingen. He's a family medicine physician from Carl in Urbana. He is with us every other month, and it's always on a Monday. In this hour of Focus, we're talking with Adam Brown. He is a state representative. He is a Republican, represents the 101st District, and he will be competing in the March primary for his party spot in the new 102nd District. And again, just if people are not sure where they fit, we're talking about a district that includes Shelby, Moultrie, Douglas counties, parts of Macon, Vermilion, Edgar, Champaign. So we're looking at part of Savoy, Villa Grove, Tolono, Shelbyville, Tuscola. The biggest town is Paris.
That's correct.
Biggest town in the district is Paris. And we're here to take questions. I will continue to ask questions, but of course, people who are listening, if you want to call in, 333-9455 is the number, toll free 800-222-9455. And we also have email if you would like to send us an email. Someone here writes in, says they are not sure that they heard you correct and wanted to make sure they did, but believe you indicated that undocumented people are not paying into a welfare system they're using. The person here writes, if they have a job, aren't they paying taxes, having taxes withheld, and then often, in fact, not filing a tax return, so they're not even getting the opportunity to perhaps get some money back?
You know, in some cases, they could be paying into the system. Unfortunately, in kid care, you don't have to express written documentation proving that you're a citizen of Illinois or even a citizen of the United States. So it opens the door for a lot of fraud and abuse. Also, we don't have a system that requires employers to check the immigration status of new hires. We tried to push for this last year, where the burden would be, of course, on businesses to put in potential employees social security number to verify that that individual is in the system, is a legal resident. Unfortunately, we've had a lot of issues trying to get that bill through. I believe that would cut out some of the opportunity for fraud in our system as well.
Mm. Let me ask you about funding for education. Would you make any changes in the way the state funds public schools?
Absolutely. There are a number of them, but most important to me right now is rural transportation. If you take a look at this new district, of course, it spans over part of seven counties. It's huge territory. In my current district that I'm representing, Arthur is annexing Lovington School District, and so that's been an issue that's been ongoing, one that we're continuing to work through several issues on. But the state wants to move towards more consolidations, more efficiencies in school government, which seems to make sense. But the problem is rural transportation was cut 2 years ago in half by state funding, and it's continued to be half-funded for the past 2 years now. Under the governor's previous budget address, he continued that path. And my school districts are really struggling with that issue. They can't afford to transport their students. If they are forced into consolidation in the future, their students could be traveling a great distance, serving many hours on the bus before they even get to the classroom. It could really open a can of worms for us. Hmm. And if we move to countywide school districts or something like that, Shelby County, which I currently represent part of, is just a huge territory. I mean, I really feel for the students as well as the school districts trying to front the money just to transport their kids to school.
Well, one of the things I think the governor has talked about and is consolidation, saying that he thinks that money could be saved through greater efficiency. And I don't know whether he thinks that can happen voluntarily or that the state would have to offer some incentives. Do you think that, and I'm sure that a district like yours would be someplace where you could think about that, do you think that trying to do that consolidation makes sense?
I think with the aging facilities, consolidations of some school districts must be on the table just based on the financial footing of a number of school boards in particular. Having them look outside of the box, take a look at other communities, discuss with other communities, I think is hugely important to the future of education in Illinois. And we're starting to see some of that through the annexation of Lovington and Arthur. By Arthur. There are also about two or three other school districts that are interested in maybe moving that direction as well. You know, we're going to applaud that effort so long as there's an opportunity for savings, an opportunity for efficiency, an opportunity for our tax dollars to go a little bit further while getting those kids the education, of course, that they need.
Yeah. We talked a little earlier about the pressures on the budget, the need to cut spending, particularly in the area of Medicaid. Now the State Board of Education, they're recommending an increase in funding for the next fiscal year. Not a huge increase, but an increase, 3.9%. Do you think that's possible?
I don't think so. I mean, where are we going to get the money from as far as this goes? And we're about to hear the governor's budget address, about to hear some of his ideas. But until we bring a better jobs climate back to Illinois, expand our tax base, these expansions of state programs just aren't possible.
Yeah. So you're certainly not for increased taxes.
No, not by any means.
So that means that if you're not going to increase revenue, unless you think by improving the business climate you can increase revenue, that really means that you're going to have to cut, and that means making really difficult decisions. So where do you cut?
Well, that's a very difficult question when we're not allowed into some of these budgetary meetings. So you start by going through the books line item by line item. I've done that. There are several areas, not only in welfare, but also, you know, you take a look at even the most basic of things. The state of Illinois has the largest air fleet in the entire nation to fly around politicians, to fly around the governor, to fly around the cabinet. We actually have, I believe it's 16 aircraft, 14 airplanes, two helicopters, something like that. But it is the largest in the nation, more than any other state. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. That just demonstrates how out of touch Illinois is with the problem that we're facing.
Well, how much money are we talking about?
Well, there are a couple million dollars there, but those millions add up long term. You take a look at the lieutenant governor's post, an office that spends, I believe, around $5 million annually and has very limited responsibilities as well. That could be cut back a little bit. There are appointments to committees that are tremendously well-funded. They're paid substantially more than I am in many cases. They do serve very important roles, but in some cases these committees meet four times a year, and folks sitting on the committee raking in over $80,000 a year, mm-hmm. as well as pension benefits and things like that. The opportunities to trim back are endless, as far as I'm concerned, but the transparency has to be there. You have to open the books to folks and give regular citizens the opportunity to speak up and say this just isn't right.
Okay. Well, so, but, you know, okay, we could sell the airplanes. We could get rid of the lieutenant governor. I'm sure that there are places here and there we could find people who are making a state salary who aren't, we're not state, not getting their money's worth. Okay. You can add all that stuff up, and you and I both know that that's not going to cut it. That the we know where the big money is, and it's the thing that's really hard to cut. So you're going to say, what do you do? You're going to close prisons? You're going to cut off funding to nursing homes? You're going to cut off funding to schools? I mean, you got to find some big savings somewhere because we know what the expensive things are.
And David, this problem didn't happen overnight by any means. It dates back many generations, and we've continued to overspend, overtax, overborrow, and it's a road that's not sustainable. So to continue to pass the buck to the next generation, not make these cuts, not open the budget, not do the common sense things, I believe is negligent. So let's start the little work here. It's not going to be fixed overnight by any means, but I'm 26 years old. I've got time to work on this, to grow a farm team, to bring folks into state government that actually care about the future, that want to see my family's fifth generation business see a sixth and seventh generation, that care about long-term viability of Illinois. I'm not packing up and leaving the state. I'm here to stay through thick and thin, and we've got issues to address.
So you talked about how you don't think that you're going to be in the legislature long enough to earn a pension. So how long do you think your legislative career will last?
I don't think I'm going to make it to 67 where I'd have to be for a full pension. I don't know how long this situation's going to take us to resolve. We've got our work cut out for us, but I have very serious concerns, not only for our state's budget situation, for, you know, the kids that I look forward to raising. I was just married 8 months ago. I'm going to raise a family here in Central Illinois, so of course I want a good school district for them. I want a viable jobs climate so they can find work, so they can raise a family of their own. These problems are all intertwined, and to make meaningful changes, we have to swallow our pride. We have to admit that we have very serious problems that have added up over the years, and roll up our sleeves and get back to work.
Okay, let's take another caller here. Somebody in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I cannot now remember which program I heard this on. It may have been Advantage to Catch 2 issues of the Commonwealth Club, which is on Saturday nights. It may have been on Bill Moyers, or it may have been on, which is on Sunday mornings on PBS, or it may have been on Friday night on Need to Know. But I have a feeling it was Robert Reich. And one of the things he was saying in his 20-minute talk was that simply cutting something like Medicare is not the way to solve the problem, that it makes more sense to look and see, given the data banks that we have, where the expenditures are going. And he said in one place, and I don't remember where it was, they did that and looked to see where most of the money was going. And it was emergency room visits in a particular population area in this subset. And so what the government agency did was say, okay, let's talk to these people and find out why they're using the emergency room so much. And they found out that it was a whole lot cheaper to have someone call the person and check in with them and help them monitor whatever their health issues were so that they could not be having emergencies. And to me, that's a much more creative way of getting services to people who need them, but also reducing costs. And I think that we all need to look at ways to do that, and we need to encourage that, not simply talk about let's cut funding to the people who provide the services, or let's cut out people who are getting the services. Do you get my drift?
Absolutely. And Medicare is a federal system, but of course Medicaid would be a state program. And I've seen it firsthand, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to this, because what I really like to do back in the 101st District is see firsthand what our medical providers are going through. So I've done several ride-alongs with Decatur Ambulance Service. They take me to hospital facilities with their patients and let me see firsthand exactly what's going on. And there's definitely some abuse there. Some people use the ambulance service as well as the emergency room as a primary care facility. I believe that could be better routed, you know, possibly to a community health center of some sort. These problems are definitely, we all feel we have to take care of the most vulnerable among us. That is our priority. That's very important. But the fraud and the abuse, calling an ambulance service when you've got a sore throat has to be addressed. How do you do it? I don't know. We're going to have to work on that. But to see those situations firsthand is very frustrating, because our public safety officials, they have other people to attain to that really do need these services.
Have you personally seen someone with a sore throat call for an ambulance?
Well, I don't know if it was a sore throat in that instance, but through my ride-alongs with Decatur Ambulance Service, it's been very eye-opening. They let me know that many individuals call up to 3 times a day. They'll go into the emergency room. They'll get the fix that they need. They'll get prescription medicine assigned to them, because they know the right things to say. They know what to mark on the paperwork. They understand the loopholes that exist in the in the system. And to see that type of abuse perpetuated isn't good for anyone. It's not good for the drug abuser. It's not good for the taxpayer. And how we work it out in the future is up to, I believe, taking a look at firsthand, doing these ride-alongs, seeing what ordinary citizens and ordinary workers go through day to day, and address those problems at the grassroots level.
We just have about 5-6 minutes left in this part of the show with State Representative Adam Brown, and if somebody wants to call real quick, we can try to get him in. Otherwise, I have a couple of other things I can ask about here. Let me ask you about legislative scholarships. Should they continue?
I don't believe so. I read a recent article after we had the opportunity to award our scholarships. I awarded a legislative scholarship last year because I believe it's a valuable program that if folks don't have the financial opportunity to go to school, I believe it should be awarded if they've shown meaningful need for that scholarship. But I did read a recent article where there is flagrant abuse in the system, where legislators are giving to campaign donors, children, they're giving to campaign staff workers. In one situation, a scholarship had gone to the same residence 5 times. And so you had college kids, college campaign staff workers, all living in the same house, all getting scholarships because they were working on a campaign. Of course, that shouldn't be the case. If we want to remove that abuse in the system, I think, you know, we'll probably have to get rid of legislative scholarships.
If a proposal came up that said we're just going to get rid of this, you would vote for that?
Absolutely. I believe the initial intent of legislative scholarships was a good intent. Unfortunately, in practice, it's opened itself up for a definite abuse.
I think that now there's a proposal that's moving through the House that would ban cell phone use while driving. Would you vote for that?
I don't believe so. You take a look at the current texting regulations. You can't text and drive, of course. Commercial drivers, they can't use a handheld device while driving. A lot of this is just common sense. And does the state of Illinois need to dictate it, or does the driver need to understand, I probably shouldn't be talking on my cell phone while trying to navigate through traffic? Do we need more state intervention and in common sense objectives like this? I don't believe so.
Do you think that citizens in the state of Illinois should have the right to carry a concealed firearm?
I do. I'm a strong supporter of our Second Amendment rights. I believe concealed carry is long overdue. In fact, we're the only state in the nation that doesn't have either concealed carry or open carry. Wisconsin just passed their concealed carry, and they were able to carry, I believe, since November. I believe it's long overdue. I believe it's afforded by our Second Amendment.
The mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, has called for a statewide gun registration. It's required in Chicago, nowhere else. Would you favor that?
Absolutely not. Chicago mayors have had an interesting take on guns over the years, and they tried to ban handguns. That was ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. I believe this new registration of firearms across the state is unconstitutional, and charging a fee on top of it is unbelievably aggravating. I'm a firearm owner myself. I believe in those Second Amendment rights. I don't believe that government needs to step in and regulate our firearms. Criminals are going to carry regardless. They don't care what the state law says. They don't have a problem breaking the law as it stands. So I believe law-abiding citizens should have the right to concealed carry.
Governor has said he would like to end the state's tax on natural gas. It would save the average homeowner $35-40 a year, cost the state $159 million in lost revenue. Would you support that?
I'd have to look at it a little bit further. The governor proposed that in his State of the State, and he proposed a few tax credits that, on the surface, they sound tremendous. Another one was a veterans tax credit. Of course, I support our veterans, but these tax credits are really small fries in the grand scheme of things. The governor ignored a lot of our budgetary problems in his State of the State. I hope in his budget address coming up, I believe it's next Wednesday, that he'll take a little closer look at the reality of Illinois, that the state is broke, that real reforms have to happen, and I look forward to what reforms he offers up.
Okay, in about a minute, anything that you would like to say that you didn't get a chance?
I'd just like to say it's a tremendous honor to serve the citizens of the state of Illinois, and it's great of you, David, to have me in here talking about the real issues that matter to residents. So I look forward to folks contacting me anytime. Feel free to email me. StateRepBrown@gmail.com is my email address. Feel free to call me, 217-791-5280. I'll be answering my own phones today because my helper is at the office. So I look forward to speaking with folks and talking about the issues that matter to them.
All right. Well, our guest this morning has been Adam Brown. He's a state representative. He's a Republican, represents currently the 101st District, and he is running in the primary next March for the new 102nd. His opponent is Robert Roman. He will be on this program on March 12th in the 11 o'clock hour. You will have the same opportunity. We'll try to ask the same questions. You can call in and talk with him. And, of course, all of the interviews that we're doing with candidates will be archived on our website, will.illinois.edu. You can also follow our Twittle. Isn't that good? Our Twitter handle. See, I'm new to this Twitter thing. Follow that at Will Public Media. Hey, thanks very much for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you. It.